Okay, so yeah, you've never been here for one of these episodes.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah, it's welcome. Cool that you're here. This is great. This is kind of mixing it up, doing something different. Hello.
Hey.
Kyle.
Oh.
Hi.
Oh, Kyle.
Kyle. Hi, hey. Kyle.
Hey, Mackett.
What's up?
Hanging out. What are you up to?
Recording a podcast.
Oh.
Oh. I mean, we're just.
Oh no!
This is an impromptu. We're just hanging out.
We just thought we'd try something different.
We're just, you know. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know we were hanging out today and just casually hanging out.
Didn't we message you? I thought you were busy today.
Nope.
Awkward.
So, you guys want to listen to some music?
You guys suck.
This may appear to be only monkey business, but in reality, it's very serious, ladies.
Zero Issues Comic Podcast. Zero Issues Comic Podcast.
Excelsior!
Alright, welcome to the show. As we alluded to in the beginning, we have a guest.
Woo!
Hello.
A very special guest.
Yeah. Kyle.
That's great.
Kyle's a special guest. Welcome, Kyle. Glad you could be here.
You know it's my birthday. I ain't mad. That was pretend.
That was pretend mad. No, we have Mr. Ryan Mackett, who your T-Bay movie guy.
That's sort of the thing.
That's sort of the thing. So, especially if you're local, you probably have heard his name or heard of the T-Bay movie guy. You do in the local paper. There's the Chronicle Journal. You do movie reviews, and you do movie reviews online. You're active on Facebook and Pornhub.
No, not so much.
I just review a couple there.
No.
The comment section is fantastic. Yeah,
more friendly than sometimes the Sunday comments.
It's completely unbelievable that these two are related.
Yeah. But you are also, you're a comic fan.
I am a big comic book fan.
Yes.
And pop culture and sci-fi and Star Wars and all the fun stuff.
Yep.
The good things in life.
You are more of a DC boy.
I am.
Yes.
I am more of a DC guy.
We'll just get that out.
We'll get that out. Yeah. But, you know, from a film critic, movie reviewer perspective, it's interesting because I can go into the Marvel movies with, like, totally no expectations whatsoever. I don't really care if they get something right or wrong. Like, if Spider-Man has organic web shooters or not, I'm not going to get upset about that.
Yeah.
But
me neither.
But I know that that can be a sore point for some Marvel fans. However, if you mess up Superman or Batman, then that's when I take issue. So, yeah, it's been a dark time.
Yes.
Yeah. the light might be coming out.
I hope the light's coming back.
Yeah. I'm with you. We've established I'm with you pretty much 100% on all that. So, yeah. Well, six times the charm, right?
Yeah. Eventually they'll get it right. Anyways, thanks for having me.
Oh, God, thanks. I'm Merc.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Bri.
And I'm Ryan.
Woo!
And let's go to the news.
Let's do that.
Current Zero News Flash.
Hey, welcome to the news. I'm very excited about this. Well, I'm kind of excited, and I'm kind of... This is an interesting thing. Conan the Barbarian has been licensed. The licensing of it has been picked up by Marvel once again.
Whoop.
Which is an interesting thing, because Robert E. Howard originally created him in the 30s. And the first one to pick it up for licensing and to do comics and all that stuff with it was Marvel, starting in 1970, and they had it until 2000. And then, I'm not really sure, I've never heard the story of why they lost it, whether they just gave it up. I have a feeling they just gave it up, because at that point they weren't really publishing anything, Conan movies were not happening anymore, and I think they just gave it up as a property. Just money-wise. Because I guess coming out of the 90s, they didn't have a lot of cash.
True. They had to get rid of some stuff.
Yeah. So then for 15 years, Dark Horse has had Conan and has been doing, I think, a pretty good job with it. I've enjoyed a lot of the books. I haven't loved every book that's come out of it, out of the Conan universe there. But a lot of it I really liked. They were reprinting the old Marvel stuff, starting from the 70s and kind of going up. So 4 years ago, Marvel got Star Wars. Star Wars was held by Dark Horse, so they took that away.
Yeah.
That was a big loss money wise for them. Now they're taking Conan, so that this comes into effect January of next year, 2019. So I'm kind of curious what's going to happen to Dark Horse.
Well, do you think Dark Horse is going to have reprinting rights still, or like they've got
They will have nothing.
So you get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
So it's like Star Wars, where Marvel, I think, has reprinted or can reprint all of the Dark Horse run, because all of that comes with the license? Is that how it works?
I'm not sure how that works in terms of, I don't know if Dark Horse has to give them the okay, but yeah. I don't think Dark Horse can continue printing them or do reprints of them, because they don't have, unless Marvel gives them the okay, which Marvel
won't. They might like own the works, but they don't have the right to do anything with them, so they basically have to cut a deal if they want to make anything.
Yeah, because I think like Dark Horse had the rights, but they were reprinting the Marvel stuff, but I think Marvel actually had to give them the okay. But then Marvel, I think, gets a cut of that because it's their stuff.
Marvel's really eating into Dark Horse pretty hard, huh?
And then there's also, and when I was looking this up, with the Fox-Disney merger, they're taking Avatar and Aliens license too. So they're Dark Horse is going to lose the Aliens license.
Oh,
so that's like a chunk of...
The Dark Horse Alien stuff is pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's pretty extensive too. Like, it's crossed over into like Predator and all this other
stuff.
Well,
it's crossed over... Aliens crossed over with DC multiple times, hasn't it? I'm pretty sure, Alien was Superman.
Alien
versus
Superman. Yeah. And of course, Superman was under a red sun at the time and had to fight the aliens like a normal human, because,
we got the right guy here today. But, so that raises a question, like, that stuff, is that just out of print forever then, I guess, or...
I don't know. I don't know how that works. And I was talking to my local comic store guy, and he's pretty sure, like, you can just buy the licensing rights, but it's still owned by, like, the Robert E. Howard estate.
Yeah.
But he's pretty sure that Disney actually purchased Conan.
Really?
Like, bought Lucasfilm, they bought it outright. They didn't just license it.
Jeez.
So he's thinking...
That would be the way to go, really.
Well, but then, like, it's Disney. That's kind of how they work. They don't really license stuff. They own it and absorb it like the Borg.
So this whole conversation, all I'm thinking about is, does that make Conan... an Avenger, or a Jedi, or a Guardian of the Galaxy?
It's very surprising. He's actually a Muppet baby.
Really? Okay. Follow up to that is...
Well, he likes adventure.
The Xenomorph Queen is now a Disney evil princess. Queen. Well, Ripley would be the Disney princess, I think, right?
No, I think the queen's the
queen. Or, you know, but so yeah, either way, you've got Ursula the Sea Witch and Maleficent and the Xenomorph Queen.
Yeah, yeah.
So Disney's really going to be able to diversify.
Yeah. I mean, has Conan had a lightsaber before? I feel like it's only natural.
We're going to find out.
It's only natural.
He's gone into the future and been interactive with the Avengers before.
So,
there's precedent there.
Oh, boy.
And let me just end this off just by...
Cuts to, like, that Patton Oswalt filibuster.
So weird how close we are.
But I posted this on the Merc page, and I had a couple people respond, and then one guy was like, oh, I loved the 90s Conan cartoon. And I just made some sort of like face thing. I'm like, oh God, it was horrible. And he goes, really? I had been told it's actually the closest to the canon of the actual books. I'm like, oh my God, no. It's not even, not even remotely. It's like a child-friendly Conan that...
Which is just not right.
I'm just going to go around and collect gems, and I'll never use my sword to harm another.
Do you have an annoying little sidekick?
Yeah, exactly.
They all had to.
Yeah. That and then like just little creatures floating around. It was just it was bad. Really bad.
I'm into this.
I have the first season downstairs if you'd like to borrow
it. I hate it so much.
It's like, it was terrible. I own it.
Of course I
am. Yeah. Oh, I'm pot kettle friend. Do you call Twitter drama news?
Donald Trump.
In this day and age, I guess you can sort of do.
Everything is on Twitter.
So there was...
Except for you.
This is a couple of weeks back now. Eric Larson tweeted something kind of out of the blue or in response to another comment.
That asshole still owes me money.
There was some, like, indie creators kind of talking about how difficult it is to break in.
Yeah.
Into like a major publisher.
Right.
So then Eric Larson responds to this with a tweet, and I'll just quote it outright.
Comics are hard to break into. If you are awful, if you do outstanding work, it's easy as hell to break into comics. This isn't the lottery, it's the Olympics. It's not a matter of buying a ticket, it's having what it takes to make the team.
Wow.
And
because everybody gets into the Olympics.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Especially when you have Savage Dragon talent.
He's saying, like, he's talking when he was a publisher, people would ask, like, what percentage of the books you pitch get greenlit. It's like, that's not how it works. And you say,
if we're pitched 100 shitty new books, zero are greenlit. If we're pitched 100 outstanding new books, we're greenlighting 100 books.
No, you're not. No, starters, no, at what point did Image ever, greenlight 100 books?
Yeah.
Like, at the same time, because...
Well, they did, but it was like, these are all of the books we're putting out in the next 5 years.
Yeah. So that sort of kicked off a, how do I word this, a little bit of a shitstorm?
A Twitter storm.
A little bit of a twit storm. A good response I thought that I'm referring to here that I'd recommend reading by the writer named Chase Magnet on Comics Bulletin called The Dangerous Idea of a Comics Meritocracy. And basically refuting this and being like, listen, like, obviously talent, plays a role. Yeah. Obviously, a massive role. Like, you need that. But that's not all there is to it.
No.
A lot of it is, again, who you know, often just being in the right place at the right time, networking. There's so many aspects to it that not everybody has an even playing field. It's not as simple as the idea that no industry, nothing at all works that way. We're like...
Essentially, you're working on a limited amount that can get in to do stuff.
Yes.
That alone, just logic dictates that...
Yes.
Not everybody's going to get in, and, you know...
And especially such an insular kind of market, yeah, like comics, where, like, everybody kind of knows each other, and you know what I mean? And I'm sorry, like, doesn't matter what business you're talking about, but people who know each other will help each other out, and it's kind of a small and tight-knit, and it's hard to get in there. Period.
Yeah.
And just the fact that it's so dismissive about those realities is sort of, I don't know.
And I've talked about it before, about seeing C.B. Sobolski, who's now the editor-in-chief of Marvel. And he did a talk of, like, how to break into comics, how to get into Marvel comics. And I...
Why?
I've gone into...
Why?
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty much.
Pretend you're someone else. I'm minority. Well, he went through the whole spiel. This is not... You don't do it this way. You don't do it this way. This is how you get it. Da-da-da-da. These are the ways to get in. And then he had a panel of artists, like pencilers, colorists, inkers, all the way down the line. And then he went like, oh, turn to them. How did you get into it? And one by one, they all said the exact opposite way that he said to get in. And you just see his face just kind of go blank. And you're like, see, like it's...
I feel like we've talked about this.
Yes.
But it's true. It's just, it's any sort of creative thing. Like there's, especially these days, there's no...
There's no one way to do anything, and it's not easy. There's a million people trying to do it, so it's just work the numbers. Like, not everybody can get in, plus not everybody can get to these big shows or have an in, know somebody, or you could live in wherever the hell, nowhere, and
just
not have cash to go to. It's basically going to cons or getting somehow contact with somebody.
And just this mindset that he says, like the idea that it's a meritocracy, is like, are you sure? Because I've read some really awful, like, major publisher comics. I've read Chuck Austin X-Men comics. And are you telling me that he was... literally, like, the best guy to be writing X-Men at that moment in time? There's nobody else who was better who could have had that job, really?
Nope. That was it.
Insanity.
Explain Rob Liefeld.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know what? If you look at his early stuff, it's very different than later stuff.
He got lazy.
It's you start working faster and you develop shortcuts. And I understand that. But when he first came out, and I actually was going back and looking at some of it, I'm like, I actually kind of enjoy some of the earlier stuff. But then it just becomes this morphs into this.
Yeah.
What the hell is going on?
Larson did say he's not a publisher anymore, right?
Isn't he?
Well, he's a founder. He's probably, but he said, I was a publisher.
He's the head of Image.
Okay, so I shouldn't say what I'm going to say. Because all I'm saying is, if that's the case, I check sales figures. I don't remember the last time I see Savage Dragon even charting, and that consistently gets published. When he came up, the way things were going, like, there were so many factors that made him successful
that...
if those weren't in play, where would he be in the position he's in?
Every
now?
Moment
can
is insular to
his
own
raw talent is the only reason he got where he is. I don't think anyone can say that.
No.
Anyway, lastly, just a quick mention that it was announced Hollywood is kind of a firestorm going on right now with the whole Me Too movement and Time's Up and all that.
Yep.
The Producers Guild of America has new anti-harassment guidelines to sort of try to help fight this stuff and avoid this stuff. And the first movie that's going to have those implemented is Wonder Woman 2.
I saw that.
Which is kind of great in a lot of ways.
it's a start. Yeah.
Absolutely. No, it's a good move. And it's that movie in particular launching it is just feels pretty good.
Yeah. Feels right.
If every other movie can follow suit quickly.
Very quickly.
We'll be in a better place, hopefully.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's good that it's the Producers Guild that kind of spearheaded this because it's, you know, if it was the Actors Guild or whatever, like ultimately everyone answers to a producer. So if it's the producers that are spearheading it,
they're helming the movie.
They're helming it. Yeah. I mean, even a director at the end of the day reports to a producer.
Yeah.
And if they're
the
ones that are holding the power, I mean.
Well, yeah, ultimately they hold the ultimate power and they like fund the thing. So it's like, okay, well, yeah, you be responsible for this because the shit goes to the top and you're the top. So.
Very interesting.
Yeah. And that's all I got. All
right.
Welcome to the warm-up!
Alright, so in honor of having our movie guy here, I was like, let's make it movie-oriented. And we've done this many times in the past. It's fantasy casting. The first one, Masters of the Universe.
Oh my god.
He-Man. But the clincher is, these all have to be 70s actors.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, if you do it now, it's going to be John Cena, isn't it?
I wouldn't be opposed to that.
Yeah.
I would.
Great guy.
But a horrible actor.
Yeah, that is true. Now, I wouldn't go so far as to say that Dolph Lundgren's portrayal of He-Man is the most iconic version of the character. But I mean, from...
It might be the second most iconic version
after the cartoon.
After the only one.
What about Space He-Man?
But no, okay, so 70s actors.
70s actors. And we'll run down some of the characters. He-Man... Of course, Skeletor. Tila, her father, Man-at-Arms. Does he have a name?
Just Man-at-Arms. It's Man-at-Arms.
Yeah.
He does have a name. And I'm going to spend the next 2 minutes looking at
Yeah, he does have a name. Because in the cartoon, you referenced him not as Man-at-Arms all the time.
It's like Duncan or something?
Duncan, that's it.
Duncan.
That is right.
My God. I did it.
Awesome. There's Eva Lynn. Skeletor's minion, Evil-Lyn, Beast-Man.
Yeah.
I included Orko.
You have to.
There's other ones. I put King Randor as well. Anything jump to mind?
Lou Ferrigno would be a great Beast-Man.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's sort of just very fitting, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say like Andre the Giant, but Lou Ferrigno is pretty good.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So He-Man is a tough one.
It's a tough one. Right? You know what? And I was like looking...
Burt Reynolds is Man-at-Arms.
Okay, you know what?
I love it.
I'll go into this now. I picked Burt Reynolds as Beast-Man. Because I wanted to do tongue-in-cheek, and you basically, it almost looks like a lion costume. It's just like a mane of fur around, but his whole face is open. You just see the mustache, and he does a lot of winks to the camera. Yeah. Yeah.
And Dom DeLuise's tramp job.
Oh, wow. It gets better.
Norm MacDonald as Burt Reynolds as Beast-Man.
Yeah, I found this backstage, an oversized hat. It's funny.
No, it's not.
Sure it is. It's funny. It's funny because it's bigger than a normal hat.
Yeah, why aren't we making movies? What the hell?
Yeah.
Going totally against like the cartoon portrayal of the character, like if we're going to look at like a serious take on this.
Or not. But go ahead.
I feel like Marlon Brando would have been great as Skeletor.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's imagine what he could have brought to that character.
In the 70s.
What shape was he in at that point?
That's Apocalypse Now, Gotham.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, he's later.
Later.
You'd have a heftier skeleton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He'd be Big Bone.
He would be Big Bone.
Whatever.
Well, that's fine.
Don't skeleton shame him.
That's fine. I'm just saying.
The skeleton was his head. I mean, the rest of it could be whatever.
I guess so,
yeah. Pretty, yeah.
Frank Langella wasn't exactly Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That's true.
Right? So there's that.
Yeah.
I don't know why my choice of Skeletor is Vincent Price. I don't know why.
That would be awesome.
But it is. And keep the mustache.
Just on top of the
skull. On top of the skeleton. Yeah, on top of the skull head.
I put Terrence Stamp.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Okay, well, fine.
Well, fine.
Pick an honest, good choice. That's good.
He-Man, I really only could come up with one because it's hard. 70s did not have big
the physique
actors.
No,
it just was not a thing. That's not... The only one I could nail it down to would be Stallone.
Oh, Stallone.
Which would be an interesting...
You know... Yeah, that would have been like Rocky era Stallone. He does have the physique.
I was hoping somebody
would
do that. I'm Adam, Prince of Eternia.
I'm power.
That is the secret to Castle Grace. I just went into total Jersey.
Love this guy. Evil-Lyn.
I went two totally different directions.
Okay, well, I'm saying it's Jessica Walter.
Whoa. Jessica Walter?
Arrested Development.
Oh,
Doctor Strange, made for TV.
Right.
Which was watching that in my basement was a precursor to this podcast.
That's true.
So,
that is true.
And I may or may not have fallen asleep at certain points.
I went either.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Sorceress Barbra Streisand.
Oh, you know what? I had on my original list of what I was looking at. I had, but I couldn't pick a thing for it.
What about that meddler?
Evil-Lyn was Cher.
Oh, yeah.
Charles
Bronson would have made great Man at Arms.
I started writing him down. Oh, I did write him down. Charles Bronson. Or I had Gene Hackman.
Oh.
Or Tom Bosley.
Tom Bosley?
He was the dad on Happy Days.
All right.
Hey, but, Mr. A for Atoms.
But I also had for Evil-Lyn, if you wanted to take it kind of a different direction, B. Arthur.
Oh, I could go with that.
Anything with B. Arthur, I'll watch.
Yeah.
I feel like Robert Redford needs to be in there somewhere.
I was looking at like the major actors in the 70s. I'm like, how do you work them in? I'm like, it's
tough.
There's no way for them to go. Orko. Mm-hmm. Danny DeVito. Or Dennis Hopper, and it would just be some big LSD trip.
Bam.
He's actually not a sorcerer. He's just hopped up as a shaman.
Well, he's wearing like a coat that only goes to about here. Yeah. I'm floating. They painted my legs blue.
Dielectric physics.
If comic book movies were as big of a thing in the 70s as they are now, that... Like, Stallone would have transitioned from Rocky to a big blockbuster comic books.
Right.
Like Judge Dredd or something.
Yeah. Well, I'm not.
You're the what?
You can take any line and just...
All right, so that takes care of... That's Masters of the Universe. Batman, and this will be modern time, but... Considering there's been 800 Batmans already, the switch on this is that it will be gender swapped.
Okay.
Mm.
Okay.
So, like, Batman would be a female Batman.
I like that.
Bryce Wayne.
I've met ladies named Bruce.
Really? Oh, I've never heard.
At least she said she was a lady.
You're still taking the origin of Bruce Wayne.
And the characterization of that character.
Bruce or Bryce Wayne, however, doing the Batman, that woman character.
I feel like you gotta go with...
You gotta have somebody who's physical enough to pull it off and has, I think, the darkness and the heaviness, the gravitas to pull that off.
My instant thought, maybe it's just because she's on a damn roll of action roles right now, but Charlize Theron.
Yeah, that's why I wrote her down too.
That's pretty brilliant.
Yeah.
Alfred, Helen Mirren, just saying.
Thank you!
Oh, yes! Actually didn't put Alfred down, but
yeah.
Dame Judi Dench would also.
Come on.
The Michael
Caine style. Judi Dench could be Commissioner Gordon.
Oh my god, this is brilliant. Commissioner Gordon.
I mean, I guess you could...
If you wanted a younger... Bruce Wayne, Bryce Wayne, whatever. I put Jessica Biel.
Yeah.
Because I think she physically...
I feel like she could be Robin.
I had younger ones. I picked for Robin, Chloe Grace Moretz.
Yeah, girl, I can see that.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
That's a good Robin.
Yeah.
Which Robin are we going with, though? Because, I mean, like, are we opening this up to every Robin?
No. It could be Tina Drake.
That's true. I'm just saying, like, it's Nightwing. This isn't Dick Grayson, right? So you're just Nightwing.
Vagina Grayson.
Screw you guys. I'm at it in the episode. I'm leaving it in. Me.
I was like, what? Oh, I get it.
She goes by Gina. It's fine.
Kate McKinnon as the Joker.
Oh, my God. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That is brilliant.
I had some good ones, but that's pretty damn good. I
really now, want to see
which,
that.
Which one of the Chris's would be Harley?
I feel like Chris Pine would probably be
he'd be into it.
Harley, yeah. I think he'd do a good job.
He's fun.
He'll give his all, for sure. I had nobody. That was the one I could not pick was Harvey Quinn.
Harvey Quinn?
Yeah. Oh, I don't have anything for bad guy either.
Like Batgirl?
Batgirl, bad guy.
Okay, yeah. So I think right away, like when I think Barbara Gordon,
mm-hmm.
I think, what's his face? General Hux from...
Donald Gleason. Donald Gleason.
I feel like he would be a good Benjamin Gordon, I guess.
Yeah,
because it's got to be kind of like, you know, Barbara Gordon's a bit
of a redhead. He's played a lot of different stuff that, like, he sells it. He sells, like, just that character where you're just like, I want you to choke to death. But but he's played likable characters where I'm just like, oh, I like this guy a lot. And I buy that for sure.
I could also see, Newt Scamander. Eddie Redmayne would also be a good bat guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also, for Joker, just go back to Joker, I had Tilda Swinton.
Okay.
She could be scary. You know, or if you want to do it comedically, Elizabeth Banks.
Swinton? I would put as a Miss Freeze, personally.
Oh, nice.
That's what I would do. But that's a good pick regardless. She can do a lot of things. She's fantastic.
For Raish, I had a couple, actually. Julianne Moore.
Yeah,
okay.
Cate Blanchett.
Yeah.
Or if you kind of want to go... a little younger and a little not more comedic, but a little different with Maya Rudolph.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know why.
I could see that.
I like Maya Rudolph a lot.
Like Lucy Liu.
Yeah. Maybe like Rachel Weisz like, for some
let
reason.
Let Rachel go back to the Asian origins.
Yeah, exactly.
That's Rachel Gould being a white person is, let's maybe stop that.
Two-Face, Hilary Swank.
She could do it.
Yeah.
Or Amy Schumer.
Oh, Amy Schumer could also do Joker or Riddler because there's some of those comedic kind of things. Yeah. But also, yeah.
I can kind of see her being two-facey all over the place.
Yeah. Apparently, a lot of her up and coming comedy friends would agree.
Bane, because it's the fluid stuff. So you just hit the thing and hulks up, so you could do total CGI craziness.
Right. Yeah.
Betty White.
As Bane.
Wow. Oh, dear Lord.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, you do a CGI thing where, like, they're not big to start with, but they get beefed up through that process.
Yeah.
I don't know, Michelle Rodriguez.
Yeah,
and I could see her being just, like, intense and, like in, you know what I mean? In that way where...
Yeah.
Because Bane's more than just a big, strong guy.
Yeah.
They matches Batman on every level.
I thought of her, but I couldn't pick a character where I thought she...
Yeah.
Can we find she's not, like, for big, Sigourney Weaver to go?
She's an Iron Fist, and she ruined it.
A lot of things ruined
her. I'm going to say also a Commissioner Gordon.
She could be a Commissioner
Gordon. Commissioner Gordons.
Two Gordons.
And they're married.
Poison Ivy, Danny DeVito once again.
That's Poison Ivy.
Yes. Okay.
But in the costume,
in the exact same costume.
It's gonna be the same costume.
I kind of feel like Daniel Craig would play a great Catwoman or Catman.
Okay,
just because he's got that kind of, you know, suave. Like I'm trying to think of like the male equivalent of the Catwoman.
I was trying to think of like more like a slimmer kind of guy. I had an Adrian Brody.
Okay, yeah. Adrian Brody.
Although he's bulked up in recent years.
Yeah. He doesn't, you know what I mean? The whole, like, cutting the thing open with the claws. He just uses his nose. Oh. I say this as a guy with a big schnoz, so it's not that mean.
Just follow your nose.
Oh, you mentioned Rachel Weisz.
Mm-hmm.
I had her down for Penguin.
Oh, you know, yeah, that's pretty good. Like, not, like, the just being a
physically
cold as ice,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Boss.
Yeah.
Killer
Croc, Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah.
Being she like a dark, weird.
Oh, that's better. That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. I can't get over Kate McKinnon as Joker.
That was so good. The thing is, if
you had her playing somebody who was like legitimately terrifying, she'd be so good.
She's gonna be really, really famous.
I think so.
In 7 years,
she already is famous, but like really,
she's
famous.
Gonna be like huge.
I think she played Pennywise in an SNL skit.
I'm just saying, like, her terrifying. Her performance, her talents could, like, again, great for comedy, but that could work so well for, like, just intense terrifying.
I mean, her Kellyanne Conway is the stuff.
Well, every character she does on, like, she's got such an interesting face. She seems like every time she does something, I'm like, is that the same person? Like, it doesn't even look like her.
Yeah, as far as the face thing, it's almost she's like Jim Carrey.
Yeah. You know, like very, Jim Carrey. I don't want to say rubbery, but just like very, I can control every aspect of my my face.
Love it.
Anyways, so that wraps that up.
Loved it.
All right. Whew. I'm spent. We haven't even got to the main topic.
What the f***?
All right, welcome to the main topic. Let me just pose the question. Let's just jump right into it. Are superhero movies ruining film? If yes, how? If not, what do you think?
How come?
Press
what
two.
What the
for
hell
no.
is wrong with you? Plus three if you want this in English.
Si vous êtes un étudiant détenant un prêt d'études et désirez obtenir un service en français, appuyez sur le 2.
If not, what do you think the short and long-term effects on film will be?
This is something I've obviously thought about a lot.
Yeah.
And it's something that it ties into so many aspects of film and filmmaking. And it's very interesting how you phrase the question, because you didn't ask the question, are comic book movies destroying the film industry? You asked, are comic books destroying film?
Yes.
And I'm assuming that you mean the art form of film.
Yes.
Because
ultimately, that's the important
thing. Because just to clear this up, if anyone's, you know, curious about this or whatever, comic book movies obviously are the hot item in Hollywood right now. And all industry, as we know, are essentially money-making ventures. So comic book movies are not destroying the film industry. If anything, they are
bolstering
the film industry. They're making lots of money. The problem is that it's just supply and demand, and it's flooding the market, and you've got all kinds of failed attempts at comic book movies trying to capitalize on the successful comic book movies. And then that's left with this diluted market that you just kind of have to wade through to find the good stuff.
Yeah.
I think for me personally, I don't think they're ruining film, because I don't think the Western ruined film. I don't think the war movie ruined film. I don't think the romantic comedy ruined film. This is sort of the current phase. It's lasting an exceptionally long time.
Yeah.
But there have been so many movements throughout the history of film where you have a certain genre
that just suddenly becomes the focus. And here, now we're going to have 42 Western movies that come out in 1 year, and this is the focus.
Exactly.
And it doesn't ruin the thing, it's the next thing.
I wasn't alive back then, but was it the same conversation taking place when there was Westerns all over the place, or there was, like, space movies all over the place?
I don't think so, but then I think part of this, and this is where this comes in, I think there's a twofold addendum to this.
Mm-hmm.
That, one, social media plays a huge part in this, is that everybody has an opinion, everybody thinks their opinion is right, and everything gets forced out, and then people recycle those opinions and put them out, but this person said this, and this person said this, and then now, oh my god, somebody said it ruined movies, I absolutely agree, and then I've taken this poll, and I would like this not to be canon, and then there's that, and then there's also film is in a very weird place right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it just happens to be happening while comic book movies are happening.
Right.
It could be anything happening right now, and I think we'd be having the same conversation.
Yeah, if it weren't for comics, it would be something else.
It could be sci-fi, Western, whatever, dramas, romantic comedies, whatever's happening. But it's the business, and they're looking for more of the business. So they just recycle and regurgitate the same shit.
And I think that's a really important point that you just made. And I think one of the things that I get asked a lot by people who read my stuff, email me and ask me, like, why doesn't Hollywood do anything original anymore? And the short answer to that is, as soon as these movies stop making $1 billion each,
yeah,
then they will start making new material.
Mm, yeah.
The flip side of that is, whenever something new and original actually ends up making its way to Thunder Bay, for example, nobody goes to see it. I have a friend that is a manager at Silver City, and he said that the outcry about the movie The Artist, when that was the thing, won the Oscar for Best Picture a few years ago, people were complaining, The Artist, it's not here in Thunder Bay, this is an outrage. So they brought it in, and he said they sold like maybe 15 tickets the entire week it was here. Hmm. And so, you know, you got to think of it like, if it's the same stuff, the same old thing, another comic book movie, oh my God, another comic book movie. Yeah, because they're all making $1 billion. And it's insane how much money is being generated by these. And again, once they stop making, watch how fast Hollywood drops that and moves on to the next thing.
Yeah.
Whether it's young adult novels comes back again. Harry Potter was a big thing. Yeah. Lord of the Rings. That could have been like the start of a massive fantasy movie genre.
It really was.
But the comic book movies kind of took over. And let's be honest here. All of the studios, whether it's any type of cinematic, shared cinematic universe, they're all trying to copy the Marvel formula that's working so well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The worst Marvel movie is... it's true. The worst Marvel movie is still...
Thor 1.
Better than... Thor 2 is pretty... They're still better than a lot of the failed, like the other failed attempts at capturing them.
To that point, people sort of beat up on some of the, like, again, Thor 1 or 2 quite a bit, but it's like, I still enjoyed them.
Yeah.
Like,
I could still go to the movie and watch it. And
it's like, I still bought those and I've still watched them again and been like, that was enjoyable. Like, I had a good time with that. It wasn't bad.
To be fair, The Dark World is the only MCU Blu-ray I do not own.
Mm.
I own all the other ones, but somehow The Dark World hasn't made it into my collection yet.
Really? I like The Dark World more than Thor 1.
Same. Kenneth Branagh, though. It's a thing I like.
I want to like him more.
It's weird, that series, we already talked about this, but that series in particular, we had like Shakespearean first thing. Very kind of like it. Game of Thrones guy to do the second one. It's like, okay. And then you had like...
Guardians of the Galaxy.
One's like, okay.
Yeah, very interesting. I think another thing, too, that when I wrote my review of The Winter Soldier, Captain America 2, The Winter Soldier, I put a little qualifying statement in there saying that movie in particular struck a chord with me where I realized that we no longer have to say it was a great movie for a comic book movie.
Right? Yeah,
yeah.
The Winter Soldier was legitimately just a great movie, whether you like comic books or not. And I feel like comic book movies now, like Logan, and there's just these movies that are coming out that are actually legitimately good movies on their own merit.
And they're also, we're lumping it into a genre as comic book movies, just because that's the source material.
That's right.
Guardians of the Galaxy is incredibly different than Logan, is incredibly different from The Winter Soldier. Like, The Winter Soldier is like a 70s spy thriller.
Like a political spy thriller, yeah.
And then,
starring Robert Redford. For God's sake.
Exactly. and that's the thing. We lumped them together at all. And I get it. And there is a certain merit to that, but then there's just so much more going on there. And then you throw in Deadpool and whatever else, and you're getting completely different stuff.
And the thing trying to say, like, people make comments, especially about Marvel, about it being like a cookie cutter, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
To a point, I sort of get what they're going for. They have this habit of like humor undercutting the drama at times, and which is a very Joss Whedon-y kind of a thing. And they're still sort of doing that. But you look at these movies, as we've just described, like, there's the tones, even within that one shared universe that everybody says they're all cookie-cutter, all the same. They're not There's a variety in stories and a variety... Like, I mean, not all of them necessarily. The Doctor Strange is kind of Iron Man. But... Magic Iron Man. But... But there is a variety of stories and tones and experiences in there that I think is, like... You know, falling under one umbrella, like, you usually don't see that as much as you do even in that kind of a thing. Like, that
universe. Well, we've never really had anything that has done this kind of wide.
Yeah,
you have,
that's
like,
true.
You have, like, James Bond.
Right.
Or Star Wars. Like, they're all sequels.
Right.
And they're usually the same characters.
Yeah.
Which these kind of are, but then, Iron Man's in this one. But then, you know what? Iron Man's not in this, and it's Guardians of the Galaxy. And you're in space now. And then,
I don't smell it. Space. S. P. Ace. Space.
And then you're on Ant-Man, and you're, like, inside somebody's body, and you're, like, whatever. You're like, I'm in microspace. And it becomes a completely different sort of thing.
This conversation brings up something that I kind of feel like gets lost with a lot of people, and the idea of the formula, especially with film, right? Everyone's very quick to talk about, like, the comic book movie formula or the action movie formula. Right. It's all the same. People sometimes seem to forget that these formulas exist within every genre.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay? There's the romantic comedy formula. Every single romantic comedy known to man follows the same formula where two people meet, they don't like each other, they fall in love, there's a miscommunication, something happens, they get mad at each other, and then by serendipity, they end up back together, happily ever after. Every single romantic comedy.
Yeah.
There is even so far as the Oscar bait formula. And it's the movie that comes out that just has that tone. It has the cinematographer, the genre cinematography,
usually,
the genre music.
A certain actor or two.
I mean, it's like, a Meryl Streep film. It's a Daniel Day-Lewis film. It's
Streep and Hanks doing
Streep
whatever.
And Hanks,
Daniel Day-Lewis is Meryl Streep.
Playing
making
Tom Hanks.
Yeah, yeah.
It's ridiculous, but
he was the whole time. Who
and making love to
you've got Street.
Robert De Niro.
But this isn't to say that that's bad. It's just that I don't see how crapping on comic book movies in particular as being formulaic. That still means that there can be good and bad comic book movies existing within that formula. The same way that not all Oscar bait movies are Oscar worthy,
but
they're all planning for that Oscar.
This plays into the social media thing.
Yeah,
it's like
and
everybody
what we were
has,
saying
and
earlier.
We're seeing way more opinions than we ever did 20 years ago.
That's right.
And
also,
it's not just a few.
Let's be real. There's traditional film people who will automatically kind of look down on anything that stems from something like comic books or something like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't watch those.
Yeah, exactly. And sort of, there's a dismissive attitude to it, you know, and sometimes it's warranted.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
And again, if anyone who maybe, you know, if they sort of were reviewing or whatever film in like the 80s, the late 80s and the 90s or something, it's like, oh, a comic book movie. Oh, great. Yeah,
right.
Steel was fantastic.
Exactly. Or Green Lantern.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're not going to make an argument for how great comic book movies are by showing somebody Steel or Green Lantern.
No, exactly.
Or Fantastic Four or Rise of the Silver Surfer. There's a lot of really bad
But then
ones.
We show you Fast and the Furious. You know what? There's shit tons of bad movies.
There,
yeah.
Exactly
there are tons.
Right.
Fast and the Furious is on, what, like, part 14? Because people go to see it.
That's right.
You were talking
about family.
Mia Familia.
It's about helping kids. No, wait, that's Pro Stars.
Pro Stars.
We've defended quite a bit.
Yeah.
But there
Let's offend.
Let's play
devil's advocate.
If you will.
No, but I really don't think.
Hello, we're in Speaker's Corner.
We have
an improv show for some reason.
We're all crammed in there.
You're making it look like the film industry is like just a linear path.
No.
That it's going to get derailed and we're not going to have movies anymore.
It's never going to happen.
Guess what? You're talking about like the big Hollywood companies doing these movies. There is a ton of independent and small company stuff that is so good, and it's so much easier than it was
before we
20 years
recording,
ago.
We're all here, and you were talking about like Shape of Water.
Yep.
And other, you've seen some other things lately that were just like great films are getting made nonstop.
Yeah, that's true.
Nonstop.
Moonlight.
Moonlight. Oh my god. Brilliant movie.
Small, independent, f***ing fantastic.
So I just need to point out here, because a lot of people forget about this too, when they're crapping all over comic book movies and blah, 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 the big popcorn movies. How do you think Fox Searchlight funds these small independent films? They do it with the proceeds from Blood Diamonds and... the revenue from a lot of these blockbusters.
Ooh, I got cars so heavy. Oh, so heavy.
That was Kyle that said that.
Yeah,
on the record.
I don't think the mic picked that up.
But no, like, I mean, there's something to be said. Like, these movies are getting funded from other pots of money.
Yeah.
That, like, it's not just like the money from a comic book movie goes only to make more comic book movies.
Yeah.
It also helps fund these other things.
And frankly, again, if you're like a Guardians of the Galaxy or like a Winter Soldier or whatever is helping fund indie stuff in some way or another, Yeah, if they're all good, that's amazing.
All that indie stuff at Disney.
Fair enough.
Let's be realistic.
Fair enough.
Well, but, I mean, Disney did put out like Pulp Fiction and stuff. And
yeah, that's true. They do.
Did they?
Well, Miramax.
Miramax. Disney owns a lot more than
they bought Miramax in 93. Pulp Fiction came out in 94. Yeah, that holds up.
Oh, look at you, Encyclopedia Brown.
That just happened to be a fact that I knew.
You just made it up.
Yeah, I think
fact check.
Having worked at a bookstore for 8 years of my life, it's a good analogy to use here. The best seller list is sort of like the popcorn summer blockbuster movie season. So if you go into a bookstore and you only ever buy books from the best seller list, that's on you. You're not taking the effort to look at the tables or to dive into the stacks and actually search something out. So I don't buy the argument that Hollywood doesn't produce anything new or original anymore. No. Sometimes you have to work for trying to find, like, there's a lot of garbage out there. You have to take the onus upon yourself to wade through it, because at the end of the day, you're only going to see the advertisements for the movies that are being pushed at you with massive advertising and publicity dollars.
Yeah.
But there's still the Moonlights that exist. There's the Shapes of Water. There's all of these other movies that are happening, you know, Ex Machina. Like, there's so many cool movies that happen that don't have the marketing budget. But if you were to just take the time to look at something more than the what's trending list on Netflix.
But this is also modern society where it's like
instant gratification.
Spoon fed. Yes. And that's become more and more. I worked for HMV for a very long time, and I had huge arguments with our bosses. I would go in and be like, I live in a nowhere kind of place. You making me put a chart that reflects a major city like Toronto or Vancouver is not what we buy here. So
that's right.
You're basically forcing that, saying, well, this is what you're buying. And this is what's, it's like, I get it. Take those things and feature them in some way, shape, or form.
Of course.
But it doesn't mean that those are the only things that you put up.
Yeah.
And it was like, you got to also react to your own market. And they were like, no, this is how it works. And I'm like, okay, so now, how does that work? You're dictating to your customers what they should buy rather than listening to them, which I think is what is happening. This is in terms of consumerism.
This is how it happens
now. It's the big business thing. It's the model of, like, we dictate to you what you're going to have.
Yeah.
And then you take it. And then so then that starts weeding those things out. Anything on the periphery in terms of movies and music and books and whatever. And you don't get those little indie things. You don't get less of the smaller company things.
You're not as exposed to them as you would be if,
And it's, you have to actually work for it.
That's,
so you get those people that are like, I love film and I want to delve into it. I love comic books and I want to delve into it and buy the indie books or whatever.
Yeah. At the same time, what you're saying too, like the modern age about equipment, even to like make a movie, if you wanted to do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
To make a good-looking movie, like, it's never been cheaper or easier to do that.
Literally.
It's crazy how good you can make a film with, like, literally, you use your freaking phone.
My iPhone shoots 4K. It shoots 4K video.
It's insane.
After Effects is $20 a month.
It's so crazy. If somebody wants to make has a great idea and wants to make it and can do something on the low budget, you don't need the studio at all.
Yeah, true enough.
However, you need
distribution,
an open internet to be able to distribute and advertise your.
You need Eric Larson to let you into a company.
Oh, that's true.
To get distribution. Yeah. Oh wait, topic. But it's been so easy. As long as you're really good,
if you're good, it's easy.
Yeah.
All right. So to sum up, yes or no?
No.
Yeah.
Comic book movies are not destroying the film.
No, God no.
The art form of
God film. No. Again, it's, you know, good movies are going to happen no matter what. And if they're good comic movies, great.
Did Andy Warhol destroy art?
No.
God knows
no.
He tried.
So, but he didn't succeed, right?
Yeah.
So it's sort of the same kind of a question.
Yep, exactly. Things will move on.
We did it, you guys.
Just like us right now.
But one last thing. The audience has to progress along with the artists creating the things. The audience has to be interactive and actually seek these things out.
Yep.
And not just complain that things are not at their door.
Not my Luke Skywalker.
Exactly. Shoot self in face.
Yeah.
Moment of zero. Moment of zero.
Hey, welcome to Moment of Zero. Now Kyle talks. Listen. Just a quick goof on. Remember maybe a few months ago, I was trying to come up with more recipe ideas? Like
super. Oh, yeah, I remember. That was a great bit. I just want to say that.
Like Hawkman, chicken fingers, stuff like that.
Delish.
I've got a list of characters, and I don't have recipes.
Oh.
So we're going to do this real quick.
Dope.
It's the all-new, all-different X-Men, and a couple more. So starting off, Storm. What's the food? What's the delicious food?
I feel like it has to be like a cocktail, like a dark and stormy.
Ooh,
yeah. Wow.
That makes sense.
This is for children.
Our podcast is for children.
What? This
podcast
is not for children. Early.
No. It's not for adult kids.
Children.
Yeah.
That's, I love that. Dazzler.
Oh, man.
That's just breakfast cereal, right? It's got like,
Pro Stars.
Pro Stars. It's all about helping kids. Pro Stars.
No, but it's got Pop Rocks in there.
It's
popping in your mouth.
Razzle dazzle.
Razzle dazzle.
Yeah. I don't know.
These sounds are turning to light in my mouth. Which is too bad, because the next one was John Proudstar.
Oh.
And what I had written down was John Proudstar's Proudstar Crunch. It's the taste you can take on one adventure, but not two.
No.
Yeah. Whatever it is, you make it. You prepare this meal, and it's like, oh, that's great. I'm just going to cook ahead for tomorrow. And it's already rotting when you take it out of the fridge next day.
I thought what you were going
to... It's the souffle that drops.
Yeah. I thought what you were going to say was you take it to a potluck and someone else has already brought the exact same thing. And so you throw yours in the garbage.
You go on a bit of a war pass.
Oh, nicely done.
All right, Banshee.
It's going to be just the most stereotypical.
What's the most Irish thing? Yeah. Oh, it's a beer.
I was like, it's a meal in a glass.
Colossus.
Oh, man.
No, we're just doing the tip. That's bad.
Steel cutouts. Hand-cut steel cutouts. What's
something you cook in tinfoil.
Yeah. Or, like, it has, it's sort of like, you know, if you make something and it's got sort of a layer on top, but it's very tough meat.
So like a shepherd's pie, but
yeah, and you
it's
have
a
like,
chuck steak.
Yeah. Something else is inside of that. It's got that tough exterior. It's like a
360 filled. Shepherd's pie. It's got like a meat orb in the middle.
That's like a beef Wellington
filled with Russian regret.
Yeah,
we've already done Wolverine, so we're just gonna skip Wolverine.
Well, let's just
Kitty Pryde, who wasn't all new, all different, but like close enough.
Yeah,
it's. Just made of lettuce, so you just feel like you're eating nothing.
Yeah.
It's really
well, like something like that just kind of melts
just
in your mouth.
Just
it melts in your mouth like right away.
Yeah.
Just, ooh, okay, that just vanished.
It's that popcorn stuff.
Yeah.
That candy popcorn.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Not Pop Rocks. That's dazzling.
A big can of Sprite.
Oh, nice.
And finally, Nightcrawler.
Oh, no. You're just eating Nightcrawlers.
You're just going fishing. Why are you eating worms? I used to be in a circus.
You're gonna feel pretty. You're gonna be bamfing all over the place next day.
I just bamfed in my pants. Oh god.
Well, I'll be leaving.
Good night, everybody.
That was it.
Yeah, that's good.
I feel like it has to be now.
Just
anyway.
All right. Thanks for joining us. I am Merc. You can find me at mercasylum.ca. www.
Don't miss a W.
He's falling down a W hole.
Yeah.
Every W is important.
Merc Asylum. MERKASYLUM.ca.
It's awful pointy in that hole.
You can find me at Merc on Facebook, a Merconaut, like astronaut, on Instagram, Merc Asylum on Twitter, but I probably won't answer you.
He's not a Tweety boy.
I'm not a Tweety boy. But I do get notifications, but nobody ever tweets me, so...
I'm going to never stop now.
So
that's the only way...
you, Twitter.
The only way I'm communicating with you from now on is public Twitter
That's okay. I can delete my emails pretty quick.
Slide right into your DMs. Die there.
I'm Bri Kotick. You can check out my comic updating Tuesdays at welcometohereafter.com. Guess what it's called? I have a lot of social media things under BryKotyk. That's my name.
Don't wear it out.
Or do. That's fine, too.
Wear it out.
I'm Kyle Lees. You can check my stuff out by Googling my name, because my name, as they say, I just said, is Kyle Lees. So go to thekylelees.com or thekylelees on any of your various social media things. I've got a whole bunch of stuff for sale in my shop, like t-shirts, books, art prints. I got the second book's coming out in about 3 months, so I'm going to start advertising for that pretty soon. So check that shit out.
Yay. I'm Ryan Mackett. You can find me. Yay! Thanks for having me, guys.
Spell Mackett.
M-A-C-K-E-T-T. But you can find me on Facebook at T-Bay Movie Guy, and you can find me on Instagram at rmcreations_.
Right.
I just started drawing up a storm this week. I was thanks, like, holy guys. Shit, he does a lot more stuff than I realized.
Yeah, you are like pumping it out. Like, you totally got amazed on fire after Inktober.
Inktober, I followed Merck's Inktober prompt list, and it rejuvenated and like just reaffirmed my love and for creativity and art, which is what I was.
Yeah.
Traditionally.
He went to art school.
First and foremost an artist. I just haven't been doing it for years. And now I'm making my triumphant return.
Yay!
So thanks, guys.
All right. That's it.
I guess that's the end.
You're still here? No.
It's over.
It's over.
We're all in the shower.
Together. Yeah.